3. Eli was 29 the third time he met Harry. He'd finally had his growth spurt and ended up very close to 6 feet tall, which had spread out his weight and almost made him skinny. Despite his mother's worries, he'd gone to college for computers and minored in history, two fields she couldn't see anyone making real money in. It turned out she was right, and he'd ended up living above a garage 2 streets from the house where he grew up. It was too hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. He drove 2 towns over every day to do IT work for the local Stahlbank branch and manage their network, which amounted to monotonous, busy work 9 days out of 10. The Tuesday evening they met started as a long overdue night with his friends. Neither of the bars in Sanders had a big screen TV, Corey's latest guideline for a good hangout. Plus, Josh had been living in downtown Dover for 3 months now, and compared to Sanders, it was a sprawling technological metropolis. So Corey and Robin picked up Eli. He sat in the back of their Honda, and they sang the songs on the radio and met up with Josh at his new place. As they all walked down the sidewalk, Robin pulled her arm free from Corey's and pointed at a car across the street.
"What's that?"
she asked Eli. He glanced over. "That," he said, "is a 1978 Chrysler Newport, serious gas guzzler."
"You'll never stump him," said Corey.
"I will," she said, "someday.
Not on cars."
They found a bar that met with Corey's approval and began to drink. Josh told them more stories of his miraculous life after Sanders and pushed them all to join him. Robin and Corey said no, as usual. They'd bought the Emporium, building and all, and lived in a spacious apartment above the video store.
"Why aren't you living here?" Josh asked Eli, turning from the couple. "You're heading this way for work every day anyway, right?"
Eli nodded and shrugged. His computer degree was worthless in Sanders. Every business in town was still working with cash registers and calculators. It was almost a 30-minute commute each way, but it was home.
"Just admit why you're not moving," Robin said. "Things are finally getting serious between you and Nicole."
Eli coughed. "That's definitely not it." "She's still trying to get that festival going?" asked Josh. "Tried and failed," said Eli. "Couldn't get anyone to back the idea of a film festival at a 1-screen second-run theater. It just sounds too small town."
"It is small town," said Corey.
"So nothing between you still?"
said Robin. Eli shook his head.
"Nothing worth talking about."
"Damn it," she said. "We need better friends. I want to go on a double date."
She mocked, glared at Josh.
"Don't look at me," he said. "The only guys worth dating around here are all straight."
He lifted one finger off his drink to point at Eli.
"Speaking of which, there's an apartment open in my building, 2 floors up. Even better view than my place."
Eli responded by ordering onion rings. Dover might have cable television, cell phone towers, and actual computers, but Sanders was home. He said so, and they all mocked him. They helped Eli eat his onion rings and then a plate of jalapeno poppers that Robin called bland, even though they made Josh gasp. Another round was ordered, but Corey had a ginger ale since he was driving. After finishing her drink, Robin pointed out women for Eli and men for Josh, but both of them laughed off her efforts. Josh and Robin risked some dangerous-looking shots the bartender offered them, but Eli chickened out. And then watches were checked, jobs were mentioned, and the night was over. They walked Josh back to his brick building loft and exchanged hugs. Eli and Corey guided Robin back to the car, and they headed for home. 20 minutes later, the car shot past the plywood sign, welcoming them to Sanders and imploring them to enjoy their stay.
"Home again, home again," Corey sang.
"Watch out for Zeke," said Eli. Corey lifted his foot and the car slowed down. Just past the sign, they saw the patrol car sitting by the side of the road. The radar gun gleamed in the moonlight. Behind the wheel, Zeke Miller's head turned to watch them pass.
"And a perfect end to the night is narrowly avoided," Eli said.
"I only had 1 drink, said Corey.
"It's fine."
"He'd make you take the breathalyzer test at least 5 times just to be sure."
"Yeah, he probably would."
"He's a jerk," muttered Robin without opening her eyes. "You know he grabbed my boobs at graduation?"
"We all know, hon," said Corey.
"He's a jerk,"
she repeated, but quieter. Then she perked up in her seat.
Oh, what's that one? Eli looks really old.
He straightened up in the back seat. The dark-colored car was almost invisible on the side of the road. Eli caught a quick glimpse of a jack holding up the passenger rear side, lit up by a flashlight beam and a red fuel can sitting on the ground behind the car.
Is that a Model T?
Said Corey. Robin whacked him on the arm.
He's supposed to get it.
Model A, business coupe, Eli said. 1929, stop the car.
What? His head twisted back again. The old Ford had already vanished into the night behind them.
Stop the car, he yelled.
Jeez, man, calm down.
Corey pulled the Honda over. Eli reached around Robin to open the door and squeezed out.
I'll see you later.
What the hell's going on?
I'm sorry I tried to set you up with that woman at the bar,
Robin said.
It's okay, Eli told her. I'm just going to go check on the car back there, see if they need any help.
Corey looked over his shoulder.
I can back up. It's not that far.
Eli shook his head. Don't worry about it.
How will you get home?
Asked Robin.
I'll walk. It's a nice night.
It's about 4 miles back to your place, said Corey with a wave down the road.
Are you sure?
I'll be fine. He patted the roof of the Honda.
I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Robin gave him an awkward hug through the window and he bumped knuckles with Corey. Then the Honda rolled back onto the road and sped away. Eli watched the taillights fade and wondered if he was doing something very stupid. He turned and walked back along the shoulder. His heart thumped against his ribs. Despite the early October air, he felt warm. A cloud of steam formed in front of him as he let out a deep breath and sucked in another one. An October night, but his skin tingled like Christmas morning when he was 8. The tall shape of the Model A appeared out of the night. The round eyes of the headlights stared at him, and beneath them, the 2 straight bars of the bumper made a flat mouth. A few more steps, and he could see the details of the radiator and the undercarriage. There were aftermarket suspension pieces by the wheel. The passenger door was open, and he could see someone moving beyond it. 2 steps to the left let him see around the door. Behind it stood a tall woman, about his age, dressed in dark corduroy pants and a blue frock coat. Her blonde hair was half hidden by a tricorn hat, but the loose ponytail still hung down her back. A wire-spoked wheel with a sagging tire lay on the ground near the foot of an old-fashioned jack that held up the back end of the car. The woman was trying to wrestle with the replacement tire while holding a flashlight under her arm. A long pole leaned against the Model A, right by its oval rear window. Eli took another step forward.
Hello.
The tire dropped, the woman lunged at the pole and whirled. It swung up, and Eli realized it was an old flintlock rifle. The weapon almost vanished in the flare of the flashlight. She held it under the barrel like a soldier or SWAT officer.
Consarn it, she said.
The flashlight beam went to his chest. The rifle continued down to the ground.
You just scared the life out of me.
I could say the same thing, he coughed. He'd pictured this moment a few hundred times in ways. None of them had begun with her shooting him in the head like a B-movie zombie. She raised the flashlight.
Wait a minute,
she said, studying his face.
Are you?
He smiled. The light dipped down again.
Eli Teague,
she said.
What a fine man you turned into.
It's good to see you too, Harry.
Twice in as many months,
she said, leaning the rifle back against the car.
Are you following me?
I don't think so.
It'd be quite impressive if you were.
Maybe a little, said Eli. For a while I wasn't sure you were real.
Why not?
Well, the last time we met I'd just suffered a head injury. It makes you question things.
She snorted.
Be a gentleman and come help me with this wheel, Mr. Teague.
Eli gazed at her as she reached for the spare. The old clothes, the blonde hair, the hazel eyes.
You look almost exactly the same, he said. Just how I remember you.
It hasn't been that long for me.
He gestured at the low loops around her neck. I like your scarf.
I have to wear it,
Harry said. She waved her hand at the night.
You might not believe it, but this town's infested with lecherous little boys trying to take advantage of a young woman's virtue.
He bit his lip.
Sorry.
She pointed at the tire.
Lift it into place, please.
Eli heaved the old wheel up. It was heavier than modern cars had led him to expect. He worked it in place while she picked up an old lug wrench. She fitted the wrench over the first lug nut and spun it.
So, Mr. Teague, she asked, finishing the nut, what have you been up to? It's been, what, 12 years for you?
Almost 16. He shrugged as best he could while holding the tire.
I don't know. Grew up. Went to school. Got a job. Doing what?
I do IT work at a bank. Mostly it's just keeping their computer network up when one of them downloads a virus or something. He saw her staring and cleared his throat.
A computer's sort of an adding machine that runs on electricity. It can... I know what a computer is, Mr. Teague.
She twisted another nut into position.
I'm not an idiot.
Sorry.
Married?
What? No.
Why not?
I'm only 29, he said.
29?
She echoed. She spun the third nut with her wrench.
So, not married. Why not?
I told you I'm only 29 and I'm not even seeing anyone right now. He thought of Nicole as he said it. They'd been hooking up in the Sanders Cinema at least once a week for 3 months now, usually on Thursdays when she stayed late to set up the new films. Nicole was only the fourth person he'd had sex with, fifth if one used a generous definition of what counted as sex. But Eli had enough experience to know the difference between sex and love. It was convenient for both of them. There wasn't anything to it past that. Neither of them wanted more than that from each other.
My parents were married at 18, Harry said, working on the last lug nut. Well, father was 18, mother was 16.
That's young, said Eli.
It's old in most parts of the world, she said, even today. So, what are you waiting for?
You, Eli said. The word popped out without any thought from him. It hung in the air for a moment before settling. Her eyebrows went up, but her eyes looked sad.
Me.
Eli scooped up the damaged tire and carried it to the back of the car. He pushed it onto the small arm that extended up over the rear bumper and stood there while Harry lowered the jack. The car settled on the ground. A minute later, she walked around and set the jack in the trunk. She went away, then came back with the toolbox. It joined the jack. She closed the trunk, cleared her throat.
I think you were confessing something, Mr. Teague.
His cheeks burned.
Yeah. Okay. I've been kind of obsessed. You appeared out of nowhere when I was a kid, and everything about you was just so... cool.
Cool?
Neat. Interesting.
I see.
Like that. You know about computers, but you don't know what cool means. You dress like you're from the late 1700s, drive a classic Model A, and you've got $15 in Confederate bills.
Only three now, I'm afraid, said Harry. But the rest went to a good cause.
Who are you?
I told you.
She wiped her hands off on the frock coat.
I'm Harriet. My friends call me Harry.
Are you just going to drive off again?
It's what I do.
She walked back to the passenger side, leaned into the car, and flipped a pair of switches on the dash.
Stay, said Eli.
Beg your pardon.
He nodded over his shoulder.
You could stay in town for a day or two before you take off again. We could... I don't know. I could show you around. I have a million questions I want to ask you.
He shook his head.
I studied history, cars, anything I could think of that might give me a hint who you are.
Tempting offer, Mr. Teague, very tempting.
She sighed and looked away.
Unfortunately, one that must be declined at this time.
Why?
Because I'm looking for something. And I'm not the only one looking, and I don't think the others can be convinced to take a few days off just because I might want to.
He rolled the words back and forth in his mind.
So... this is some sort of contest?
More of a treasure hunt.
He set his hand on the passenger door.
Do you need help?
Inviting yourself along, are you?
No, he said.
Maybe. I've just been hoping for years that you'd show up again. I don't want it to be over in less than half an hour. She gazed at him for a moment. Her right hand came up, then settled back at her side.
I'm sorry,
she said.
I've already lost one partner, not again.
Ah, said Eli. I didn't know.
How could you?
She patted the car.
Anyway, I must be off. I've got to be in Boston on Friday.
What's in Boston?
Quincy Market. Someone's going to be there at noon selling information. I need to buy it.
For the treasure hunt, he said.
Something like that.
That you don't need help with.
Again, sorry.
And that you're carefully not telling me anything about. One side of her mouth twitched up,
just for a second.
It's safer for you if you don't know.
Well, it shouldn't be too hard, he said. If worse came to worst, you could probably walk to Boston in 3 days.
I don't have 3 days, she said. I've only got 2 hours.
You just said you've got until Friday.
I've got to be there on Friday, but I've only got 2 hours to get there.
You lost me.
Again, it's safer for you that way.
Harry reached into the car and flipped a few switches. The engine rumbled to life. She kicked at the dirt with her shoe.
I wish things could be different, Mr. Teague.
So do I, said Eli.
You seem very nice and clever, and you're very handsome. I think it could be pleasant getting to know you better.
She gestured at the purring Model A.
But this is a dangerous quest I'm on, and I won't risk anyone else's life.
Quest? Harry stepped closer. She was a good height, just an inch or so shorter than him. Her hands settled against his chest. She leaned in close, her lips brushed his cheek, and warm air flowed across his ear.
Goodbye, Eli Teague.
She shoved him. He stumbled on the soft shoulder, grabbed at the air, and fell on his ass. He looked up, and she was already in the driver's seat, taking the wheel in her hands. Eli crawled back to his feet as the Model A rolled onto the pavement and made a tight turn, heading back out of Sanders. His stomach churned as the car pulled away, but he raised his hand to wave farewell. Harry waved back, and then she vanished into the night.